The idiot Finch kid came sliding into camp, drenched to the skin like he'd fallen in a river. Ephraim Swan heard the muffled voices outside his tent and pulled his boots on. He had given strict orders no one was to leave the women until he returned. With Frank Morgan on the prowl, it was impossible to predict what might happen.
I'm cold, Ephraim. Where are you going?
Swan turned to the skinny little redhead in the bedroll next to him and held up an open hand. She was no more than 17, and groggy from the Chinese drugs he'd given her.
You stay there, Carmen, and shut your mouth. I got some business to take care of, and then I'll be back and warm you up proper.
Swan pushed the tent flap aside and pulled his oilskin duster up around his shoulders to ward off the heavy mist. He hadn't bothered with a shirt, and a trickle of rainwater ran down the small of his back and made him even more irritable than he already was.
What in the hell are you doing here? The buyers won't be here to talk to me till tomorrow. I told Spence you should all stay with the wagons until I got back.
Spence is dead, Mr. Swan.
The frightened kid chewed on his lower lip enough to make it bleed. He had his hat in his hands, and rain plastered his blonde hair to a freckled face.
They're all dead, except Gibson and Farmer. I think they ran off right after the shooting started. I thought maybe they might beat me back here.
Dead? Ran off? Who was doing any shooting? God damn it! Now just slow the hell down and tell me what happened. Are the women dead?
Not as far as I know, sir. It was all out of nowhere. Like the pure fury of hell. A posse swept down on us not more than a couple hours ago. They didn't ask no questions or even give us a chance to give up. They just started shooting. I was in one of the wagons. I heard a noise, and when I looked out, I watched them blow Will Pasco's head off with a shotgun. People were dying all around me. Somehow, I made it to the horses and got away.
The breeze kicked up a little, and Swan could smell urine. The idiot kid had not only abandoned his post, but he had pissed himself in the process.
Let me see your pistol, you gutless little puke. Did you even shoot back at the posse?
Finch handed over his gun and nodded quickly, his head bobbing up and down like he had palsy.
Yes, sir, Mr. Swan. Sure I did, but there wasn't much to shoot at. It was dark and there was everywhere. All I could see was fire and smoke and rain.
The revolver had indeed been fired 4 times. Swan put a hand on the kid's shivering shoulder.
Calm down and listen to me, Finch. I stand to lose a lot of money if anything happens to those females. They got their life savings hidden in the wagons, and I got an interested party who will pay handsomely for fresh women. I need you to think back and tell me which way the posse came from, how many were there, and what was the last thing you saw them do?
Swan was having a difficult time believing a posse would just happen on a wagon train of kidnapped women and shoot it out with his men without asking a few questions about identity. His gut told him different. This whole thing smelled like Frank Morgan.
I don't know how many there were. 10, maybe a dozen? Like I said, they came on us after dark in the middle of a gully washer. With all the thunder and lightning, it was hard to tell how many of them there was for certain.
But you came back to tell me, while Gibson and Farmer ran away for their lives? You just wanted to let me know something happened, didn't you?
Finch's sallow face brightened at the thought that he might have done something good. He looked at the small crowd of Swan's other men who had gathered around, their own slickers drawn tight to their necks from the cold rain and the tension in the air. The boy swallowed and started to stand a little straighter.
Yes, sir, Mr. Swan. I did. I came back to report to you what happened.
But think now. You don't remember anymore.
No, sir.
All right, then. You go and get dried off and get yourself something to eat.
The boy nodded and turned to go. He stopped and turned back.
Oh, my pistol.
Here.
Oh! Swan shot him in the face. The horses along the picket line a few yards away snorted and stomped at the shot, and several men poked their heads out of their own tents to see what had happened. When they saw Ephraim Swan standing in the rain with a gun in his hand, they wisely got out of his sight.
I reckon Gibson and Farmer were the smart ones.
Swan handed the smoking pistol over to the stoic outlaw who stood beside him. Swan then looked down at the body and watched it twitch in the mud.
I can abide a man who gets run off by a posse. I can even abide a man who gets himself shot up by Frank Morgan. But I can't abide a man who'd piss himself in the middle of a fight.
Swan strode back to his tent, then turned and looked at the other outlaws.
I want the men ready to go first thing in the morning. Those wagons can't have traveled far in this weather.
That wasn't no damn posse that took those women back from us. It was that son of a bitch Frank Morgan. I don't care how fast he is. I aim to get back what's mine.
The other men grunted and slogged away through the mud. Swan had no doubt the men would be up and ready before he was. He kept them in lots of money, liquor, and women for very little work. And every so often, he killed one of the weak to show them all he was a serious man. Inside the tent, Swan threw the wet oilskin over a small wooden traveling chest and climbed back into the blankets next to Carmen. The Chinese herbs he'd given the girl to smoke had made her groggy, and her head lolled back and forth when he tried to wake her up.
Stupid whore!
He slapped her hard across the face to bring her out of her doze. His hand left a pink imprint across her pale cheek. He slapped her again to make sure she was awake. She flinched and batted her foggy eyes at him, then smiled. Swan stared at his groggy bedmate in disgust. It was no wonder his buyer was willing to pay for fresh meat. Women who a man didn't have to slap to get them going. Women who still had some fire left in their eyes. Tomorrow, he'd ride back with his men, kill that meddling fool, Frank Morgan, and get those women back. Dixie drifted in on the mist with a cup of coffee about 4 o'clock the next morning. She carried a rifle in her free hand.
Thanks. What's got you up so early?
I came to give you a break from watch. You better get some sleep, Frank Morgan. If what you say is true, come tomorrow. We're gonna need you awake and ready.
I'm afraid I'm still too wound up to sleep. But I'll try to get a cat nap if I can. Mind if I ask you something?
Not at all, Frank. Ask me anything you want. Were it not for you, none of us would be around.
What do you plan to do from here on out?
Go forward, I guess. Just like Virgil planned. We sold everything we had back home in Indiana. The girls and I have nothing left to go back to. Why do you ask?
What'll you do when you get there? Hunt for gold?
In Colorado? Heavens no. Gold hunting was Virgil's job. Well, I'm not too old yet. I suppose I could learn to do a number of things. Paula Friedman's a school teacher, and I'm every bit as smart as she is. I could always be a matronly widowed schoolmarm.
Dixie took a seat under the canvas shelter next to him, and they sat in silence for a few minutes. Rain dripped off the edge of the makeshift tent. Horses and mules milled about in the pre-dawn darkness, snorting for their morning feed.
Dixie, you may be a lot of things. But a widow is something that'll not suit you for long.
To his surprise, he fell quickly into a dreamless sleep. 4 hours later, Frank woke with the smell of coffee and bacon in his nose. He sat up, rubbed a calloused hand across his face, and groaned. Wolf, lying a few feet away, chewed on a soup bone and gave him a scolding look for sleeping in so late. The rain had stopped and the sun was well up, but everyone was still asleep except Dixie, who stooped over a fire, stirring a pan of bacon with an iron fork. She brushed a lock of auburn hair out of her green eyes and looked up at him. An errant dab of flour decorated the tip of her button nose. Frank couldn't help but notice the pink glow in her cheeks.
Thought I could make myself useful while I stood watch.
Why, Mrs. Carpenter, considering the circumstances, you look the picture of health.
Well, that's just what every woman wants to hear in the morning, Frank. Dixie, you're not as sickly as I thought you might be.
I mean, you look radiant. Happy. Corn-fed.
Dixie threw her oven mitt at him and stuck out her bottom lip in a mock pout.
Where I come from, corn-fed means fat.
Frank looked at Wolf, who offered no help.
Out here, certain things are important in a woman. Sturdy health and having a little meat on the bones are traits to be envied. Though I reckon next time, I'll just say you're beautiful. Stop it right there.
Betty Ellington's 6-year-old daughter, Sarah, rescued him. She walked up to Frank's wagon, dragging a quilt, and held her hands up for him to take her. He squirmed and looked over at Dixie.
She trusts you, Frank. Pick her up and hold her for a few minutes. The poor child deserves to feel safe for a few minutes. Just don't call her corn-fed and you'll be all right.
Frank hoisted the tiny girl up onto the wagon beside him. She didn't say a word, but seemed content to sit in his lap and lean her small head against his chest. He could feel her heart beating. She trembled like a frightened bird. He couldn't help but imagine what Wilson and his men had had in store for this innocent little one. Bile rose and burned the back of his throat. His stomach churned, but he tried to keep his outward composure so as not to alarm the girl. He rocked her gently and vowed to get her safely out of this awful place. Two hours later, saw everyone loaded, hitched, and on the trail. Frank rode Stormy out on point. He entertained the thought of riding some more with Dixie, but decided against it. She was too recently widowed, too emotionally raw. And his feelings for her were too strong. He couldn't hide them. It was best to give her a little time. By 3 in the afternoon, they were well out of the desolate strip known as No Man's Land. They'd had such a late start, they didn't stop for lunch, but kept pushing, hoping to put as much distance between the plodding wagons and Steve Wilson's gang as possible before making camp. Frank checked each wagon, asking if the women were all right. They all nodded in turn. The only two of the ragtag group who ever had much talk in them now were Frank and Dixie.
There now. Steady.
Frank rode by her wagon in silence for a time, scanning the country, listening to her cluck and scold the mules. She had no idea what a commodity she was in country like this. The low sun cast an orange shadow across her face and hair. The auburn locks mixed with the dark shadowed highlights and made a radiant show of color. It reminded him of a brindle bull he'd once had. And though he'd always thought the bull particularly handsome, Frank decided to keep the comparison to himself.
I'm gonna hang back for a few miles. You take the wagons up over that little ridge ahead there. I'll scoot up there first, make sure nothing's gonna bite you on the other side. Then I'll work my way back to see who's following us. You stay with the wagons.
You know best, Frank.
He turned Stormy to ride away.
Oh, and Frank, don't worry, I've had 3 babies. I suppose there are worse things to be called than corn-fed.
The gunfighter tipped his hat, put the spurs to Stormy, and whistled for Wolf to follow. His mind was a whirl, and he found himself grateful for the chance to ride alone. The terrain was a series of one grassy rise after another, and Frank watched the last wagon disappear over a long mound to the northwest. He left his horse in the draw, and worked his way up on the ridge to the south. Flat on his belly, he used his field glasses to scan the prairie on their muddy back trail.
Damn, Wilson, you sure know how to build an army.
A large group of riders kicked up turf along the wagon track. He played the binoculars back and forth until he found the face he was looking for, the man he knew as Steve Wilson, Swan's alias. The outlaw rode to the far left of the group, on a nimble sorrel that looked like it might be a thoroughbred. Frank didn't recognize any of the other men, but two fellows out front looked haggard, as if they'd been riding all night. He pegged them for escapees from his ambush. He counted 19 men, all riding with a vengeance. There was no way he could take them all, not even from his position on the high ground. But he could kill Steve Wilson. That might be enough to confuse the gang. Cut off the head of the snake, leave them leaderless. Frank smiled as the outlaws came into range and adjusted the elevation on the Creedmoor ladder sights of his rifle.
Just a few yards more.
But Wilson had a bit of the curly wolf in him. Just before he came into range, he slowed the tall sorrel to let the rest of his gang rumble past him. Once they realized he'd stopped, the others reined up as well, circling their leader, milling about in the sparse grass. Wilson spun on his thoroughbred, pointing up the track where the wagons had disappeared. 3 of the men peeled off from the main group and took off at a lope to reconnoiter. Their route would bring them within 50 yards of Frank's spot. Except for the short-stemmed buffalo grass, he had no cover.
Damn it. I'm not gonna kill you, Wilson, if you stand back and let your boys do all the dirty work.
He swung both legs around to half-turn his body and get a better shot at the three approaching riders. He was still invisible to Wilson and the others, but if they all decided to rush him at once, things were bound to get hot.
Turkey shoot time, I reckon.
Frank lowered the sliding V on his sights, readjusting for the closer range, and followed the first of the three galloping outlaws with his rifle barrel. Methodically, Frank swung his aim to the right as he ejected the empty grass and levered in another. The trailing rider tumbled backward, head over horse butt, to the ground. The middle rider, all alone now and in the open, tried to turn his horse and race back to his companions. Frank never gave him the chance. All three riderless mounts, tired from the hard push, dropped their heads to their dead riders, sniffed them, and commenced to graze on what little of the tough grass they could find on the prairie. Frank turned his attention back to the now smaller army of outlaws, pushing three fresh rounds into the magazine of his Winchester as he did. It would be suicide for Wilson to charge the hill, but Frank had come across plenty of suicidal leaders before, especially those willing to let their men do the lion's share of the dying. Laying the rifle on the ground beside him, Frank picked up the field glasses again. Wilson studied the plain around him. He had a spyglass of his own, but the setting sun was in the outlaw's eyes and made it difficult for him to get anything but a glare. Still, Frank was sure the man had a pretty fair idea of where those shots had come from, so he pushed himself back from the lip of the hill, then sprinted to Stormy and loped along the draw to get a new vantage point a few hundred yards to the north of the wagon track. When he poked his head up again with the glasses, the outlaws were on the move. As Frank suspected, they were doing just what he would do if he were them, trying to flank him. Wilson and a small contingent of three riders stayed back, just out of rifle range, while the rest of the crew split off into two groups of six, riding to the north and south. If they figured out where he was and rushed him all at once, Frank was done for. The riders heading north were well within rifle range, but if he shot, he'd give away his position. He thought about hopping on Stormy and trying for a better fighting place. Trouble was, there wasn't one.
Wolf, this turns out like I fear it might. You take care of your old bones.
Wolf whined and backed down the hillside a few inches as if he knew what was coming. The gunfighter picked the lead northern rider, bowing as he did to save at least one bullet for Steve Wilson before the fight was over. As he aimed, Frank took into account the stiff evening breeze that whirred in his ears and made ready to start the fight. The crack of a distant rifle sounded over his right shoulder, and Frank glanced to see one of the southern riders tumble off his horse. The man stood, clutching his arm, then fell to his knees. The sound of another round reached Frank after the first bullet had done its work. Willing to take help from wherever it came, Frank spun and began to pluck northern riders from their horses. He took out three of them before the others could scurry out of range and lope back to their boss. Four outlaws returned from their foray to the south. A look through the field glasses revealed one of their horses was limping from a bullet wound in the shoulder. Wilson played his spyglass back and forth along the horizon. The big man seemed to shake with hatred as he sat in the saddle.
You know it's me, don't you, you worthless son of a bitch?
Frank watched the gang turn, Wilson in the lead during the retreat, and lope back the way they'd come. Before they were out of sight, the man on the wounded horse slid to the ground, shot his mount with no more care than if he were pitching a stone, then climbed on behind another outlaw and disappeared over the long hill.
Wilson, or whatever your name really is, you're gonna rue the day you ever even heard my name. But first, I reckon I should go see who just saved my hide.
Ephraim Swan jerked on the reins and slid his sorrel thoroughbred to a sliding halt in the mud.
God damn that motherfucking Morgan! That son of a bitch! That nosy bastard! Wait till I get a hold of him! I'll skin that cocksucker alive!
He let fly a string of epithets that caused the rest of his men to hunt for an escape path. He'd run across Gibson and Farmer earlier that day, tracking the wagon train and trying to figure out a way to get the women back. That alone had saved their worthless hides. Now he was down by 8 men and the same number of horses. Some of the horses might wander back, but he could ill afford to lose 8 more gun handlers. Morgan had already killed 12 of them, 13 if Swan counted the Finch kid, whose death Swan ultimately blamed on Morgan's actions as well. That left a total of 21 men. A mighty tall order, even for a man with Frank Morgan's reputation. Some of the women must have been helping him. On top of the losses, Briscoe was wounded in the thigh and Farmer in the shoulder. Swan was sure both men knew the consequences if they slowed down. All the surviving men milled around their leader, waiting for an order. He could see the anger and fear on their faces, but at least none of them had pissed their pants.
We're gonna have to rethink this, boys. He's got some of the women shooting at us, too. But I don't think they'll be much of a problem once he's gone. They still got a long ways to go. They're bound to make a slip.
Swan surveyed the group of mounted men. Each of them was toughened by weeks on the trail and had a hard enough look to frighten most civilized humans. But he doubted any one of them could handle a man like Frank Morgan. From what Swan had heard of the man, he was a long way from being civilized. No, Swan would need more than he had if he wanted to take back his women. So far, the odds had been in Morgan's favor. There had to be a way to tip those odds. The outlaw smiled to himself. He knew what it would take to stack the odds against the famous gunfighter. Odds were nothing more than numbers, after all. And with the profit Swan would make if he got back the wagons and the women, he could afford to invest a little money to up the numbers.
Spread the word, boys, to all those you know that I got $10,000 to anyone who can bring me proof they killed Frank Morgan. I don't care how it's done. I just want him dead.
By the time Frank worked his way back to the wagon track, he saw Dixie making her way toward him on a big paint horse that had belonged to one of the kidnappers he'd killed. She was wearing her blue gingham dress, a gray cooking apron, and a smile that covered her entire face.
What were you thinking?
Is that any way to treat a fellow combatant?
Dixie drew up next to him and they rode stirrup to stirrup. The rising prairie wind blew a lock of hair across her flushed face and whipped her billowing skirts around enough to give her paint the jitters.
How about this, then? I'm much obliged to you for saving my worthless neck.
Oh, that'll do.
Over a hot supper of chili and cornbread, the little group celebrated the day's victory. In a country as hard as this, surviving another day was something to be thankful for. All of them knew firsthand what a hard country it was.
Are you ladies certain you want to continue in this venture?
We have nothing to go back to, Mr. Morgan.
Betty Ellington ran a brush through little Sarah's hair. The poor woman had already cried herself dry.
Wilson came into our little town back in Indiana and convinced our husbands to sell everything we had to give us a stake out here. He got them all whipped up into a frothy fever about the prospect of gold. I told Harry I didn't trust the man, but he was blinded by the thought of riches. Now we're stuck in a place we used to call home, where everything that was once ours has been sold off. And a fearsome place we've never been, where we have nothing.
Indiana is just too full of memories.
Paula shrugged and poked a stick at the fire.
Memories of our husbands and our sons. It would be too painful. I'll never go back. I can teach school, and every one of us has experience working in shops or sewing. If we pooled our money, we could start any number of different kinds of businesses.
Once you get settled, you can sell these mules. Get a handsome sum of money. They are magnificent animals.
As much as we paid for them, they ought to be. Wilson found them for us and recommended them to our husbands.
Paula poked at the fire as if she were poking Wilson in the eye.
How much further to Denver, Frank?
Dixie sat down on the quilt next to him. She was close enough he could smell her hair again.
A good ways still. Weeks depending on the weather, how well the stock holds up. We're still in Kansas, some east and a little south of Dodge City. Say, how are your supplies holding out?
We could use some. The outlaws took most of our bacon and all but a dab of our sugar.
I'm surprised they didn't find your money.
We can thank Betty's old man for that. He built false bottoms in all the water barrels. They were standing next to their loot all the time, but they never knew it was there.
Well, the point is you have money to take on some supplies and still make a good go of it wherever you land. So, what do you say? You want to head for Dodge?
I'd sure like to have me a real bath and sleep one night in a feather bed.
Paula gave the back of her wagon a wistful look.
And I'd like to send a wire to Weldon's mother and let her know he's dead.
Betty Ellington nodded. Carolyn Brandon just stared into the night.
Dodge it is, then. But I have to warn you, it's a wide-open town, ladies. It can get mighty rough when the drovers come through.
Well, they have more law there than is out here, don't they? Some kind of police force?
Yeah, they got better than a police force. They got Bat and Ed Masterson. Ed is the town marshal, Bat is the county sheriff.
You know them?
I know them, and they know me.
What does that mean?
We're friends of sorts. They know I won't cause any trouble for them, and they know not to prod me.
Will they have rock candy?
Sarah Ellington asked from her spot on the quilt by her mother. Frank winked.
A whole sack of it, darling. A whole sack of it.
Paula looked up at Dixie, then over at Frank. Her round face glowed red from the embers.
What about after Dodge? Our trouble is we don't know how to get where we're going. Would you consider guiding us, Mr. Morgan? We could pay you well for your trouble.
Take pay for such a pleasure? He joshing me? It'd be an honor to guide a passel of women as beautiful as all of you.
Well, aren't you the silver tongue?
I want to warn you of one thing, though.
And what could that be?
Frank raised his empty cup.
I'm a coffee-drinking man, I am. I prefer my coffee like my women. Strong.
Everyone laughed while Dixie took the tin cup and refilled it. The animals had all been fed. Wolf was full of biscuits the girls had given him. Coffee in hand, Frank leaned back against his saddle. His belly glowed with the warmth of spiced chili and cornbread.
I'll talk to Bat as soon as we get into town. Explain everything that's happened. He'll make certain no one messes with your wagons or mules. It's 100 miles or so past Dodge to the Colorado line, but it's early summer. We got plenty of time as far as the weather goes. We can make Dodge by day after tomorrow if we start early.
I'm ready to go now. I can hardly wait for a bath.
Morgan, you're no good son of a bitch.
Frank heard the voice behind him as he spoke with the liveryman in Dodge. He turned to find the dapper-dressed Bat Masterson, derby hat low against the evening sun, standing behind him.
You're losing your edge, Morgan. Letting me sneak up on you like that.
Hell, Bat, I smelled your fancy cigar 5 minutes ago while you're dealing with that drunk cowhand across the street. I saw your reflection in the glass there when you stopped to consort with that loose woman on the sidewalk. Even noticed when you bent over to brush some horse crap off your shiny boots on your way across the street. If I wanted to brace you, I'd done it long before you made it this far. How you been, you fancy old fart?
I'm doing well, thank you for asking. Who you calling old?
Yeah, I get your point.
I understand you're now the patron saint of lost widows, orphans, and wayward wagon trains.
You got some spy network. We only been in town 15 minutes.
Those women can't stop talking about their hero. Tell me, Morgan, what in thunder have you got yourself into?
I'll tell you, Bat, I'm not entirely sure. But I do know one thing. It's been an eternity since I had me a cup of coffee, and I'm sporting a buffalo-sized headache. I'll let you and me hunt up a pot, and I'll fill you in. Kind of a long story.
Bat's brother, Ed, joined them as they walked into the cafe. A pot of coffee and 3 pieces of apple pie later, Frank finished telling his tale. Both lawmen shook their heads in disgust. Bat was the first to speak.
I never heard of anyone named Steve Wilson, but the man you've described is a no-good slave trader and whiskey runner named Ephraim Swan. Hails from somewhere back east himself, Ohio, maybe Illinois. Anyhow, it's got to be him with the white eyebrow and scars.
I figured his name wasn't Steve Wilson. Ephraim Swan, huh? Name rings a bell.
Stealing women is what he does best. He lures them out with all sorts of schemes, then sells them to the highest bidder, usually down in Mexico. I got a stack of wanted posters for various nefarious activities he's been involved in.
I'd appreciate it if you have your men look out for him while we're in town. These women are bound and determined to get on to Colorado with their wagons.
Everything will be safe while you're here in Dodge, and as long as you're in the county. Tell the women they can bank on that.
I'll post some men to guard the wagons day and night.
I appreciate it, boys. Say, I suppose you'd be wanting my gun while I'm in town.
Nuh-uh. You wouldn't give us all of them anyway, Morgan. I know you better than that. Too many people gunning for you. Besides, turning in your gun has never worked out here.
I heard Wild Bill has a little trouble with it.
No, he does. We have to pick our battles. But his attitude might get him killed one of these days.
In any case, you watch your back, Morgan. Every two-bit gun-toter this side of creation just itching to do battle with you on the streets of Dodge City. And that's not counting any hired killers Swan is sure to send to brace you.
Just watch the women for me, boys. Neither of you should have any problem with that. And if one of those folks you talked about shows up and the shooting starts, punch your holes and stay out of my way.
Dixie had taken her time in the bath. Once she felt clean and relatively pretty, she tied a ribbon around her wet hair and went to search out Frank.
Frank Morgan, ma'am? I believe you'll find him in the bathhouse out behind the barbershop and Chinese laundry.
Feeling conspicuously unescorted on the dusty street, Dixie paced back and forth under a huge painted sign that declared Dodge City Tonsorial Emporium. Hairs cut and teeth pulled. J.F. Willoughby, proprietor.
Beg your pardon, ma'am. Have you seen a beautiful corn-fed lady hereabouts? She's wearing a ratty old blue dress, not nearly so handsome as the one you have on.
Dixie rolled her eyes and turned around to see Frank Morgan, dressed to the nines, standing in the entry to Willoughby's tonsorial. The sight of him took her breath away. He'd changed out of his tattered trail clothes and into a black suit with a blood-red shirt and black kerchief. His boots were freshly polished, and his hat was brushed and blocked.
Well, I hope you're going to a wedding and not a funeral.
Either one be about as sad for a woman who tried to stand by a fella like me. I'm a tough row to hoe.
You're a mite weedy at that.
Well, I must say you are a... I have to choose my words here.
Frank took off his hat.
Ravishing. How's that for a $2 word?
You mean it, Frank? Do I look all right?
Dixie didn't know why, but she needed to hear it from him. She'd been a mother for 16 years, someone's wife, for pity's sake. She hadn't heard such kind words in a long time and didn't realize how starved she was for compliments.
Of course I mean it. You're beautiful.
Well, you are quite the dashing figure yourself, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, a bit worse for wear, I'm afraid.
Frank took Dixie's hand and motioned down the street.
Shall we go for a stroll?
Where's your dog? I thought he never left your side.
He's in the stable where he can stay out of trouble. I told him to stay there, and he'll mind me. You see, Wolf likes to gamble too much. And he's a bit of a boozer, so I have to keep him tucked away. I've arranged for the livery man to feed him.
Can I ask you a question, Frank?
You bet.
Are you ever able to take off your gun?
Well, I don't bathe with it, if that's what you mean.
I bet you do, too.
She elbowed him softly in the ribs. It was an odd thing that she was allowing herself to be so forward with another man mere days after Virgil's death. But the truth was, without Frank Morgan, the West felt like too big a place for her. Alone, she felt as if she might just blow away on the prairie wind.
Seriously, Dixie, there are a lot of folks around who'd be mighty happy to see me planted in the ground. Not a lot of sense in it, but that's the way it is, pure and simple.
She slowed her walk and turned to face him. He was a full head taller than her.
I have to tell you something. Before all this happened, all the killing and the bloodshed, I didn't understand you. To tell you the truth, I'm not sure I do now.
It's a hard thing to kill a man. It changes you, Dixie. You're learning that firsthand, I fear. And I'm sorry it had to come to that. Sorry for you.
She felt his arm stiffen, and he drew his hand away. A young man in a mouse-colored slouch hat stood leaning against a hitching post in front of a dilapidated dram house across the street. He was staring at Frank through mean slits.
I see him.
Dixie stepped away to give Frank room if he had to move.
Well done.
Frank put his left arm around her shoulders and gave her a squeeze. She was amazed at how good it felt.
He's not quite ready for me yet. Still working to get his steam up.
You know him?
Afraid so. His name's Jack Miller. His brother Dan tried to ambush me some months ago down north of Eagle Pass.
And you killed him?
Had to. Dan Miller wasn't one for talking things over.
Are there many like this one?
More than I'd like, that's for sure.
And he's gonna try and kill you too, to avenge his brother, who also tried to kill you.
Yeah, but he's still trying to work up the gumption to pull on me. He might still need another beer or two.
Will you warn me when he's worked up the courage?
Frank smiled and gave her shoulders another squeeze.
You're learning quickly. I think you'll know. Say, where are your daughters?
I told him to stay at the bathhouse with the Fossman girls and try and cheer him up.
Think they'll stay there?
They'll mind me as good as Wolf minds you, I bet. Miller's following us now.
I see him. Step in here, I'll buy you a phosphate. They're mighty tasty. Maybe Jack will cool off a bit if I get out of his sight.
A short time later, Frank ushered Dixie back out onto the sidewalk. He stuck his head out first, then took her hand again to lead her back toward her hotel. She'd learned enough to stay on his left side to keep his gun hand free. Miller still loitered on the other side of the street.
There's no way out of this, is there?
Nope. Jack's worked up a full head of steam. I reckon he'll be calling me out any time now.
Well, why don't you call the town marshal or your friend the sheriff and get them to put a stop to this?
Might get him killed. Jack might be scared of me. But he's no slouch. Nah, if anyone has to die because of this, it has to be him or me.
Dixie spied one of Ed Masterson's deputies leaning against a post a half a block away, watching. He was a lanky fellow, 10 years younger than Frank. He had kind eyes. She shot a glance at Frank.
He's got on a badge. Why won't he do anything to stop this?
Because he's a man of the West, Dixie. It isn't the way things are done out here.
Then what good are they? This is absolutely no different than it was out on the prairie with that gang of killers after us. We're still all alone.
I don't know what to tell you. In some ways, I suppose we are. Out here, a man saddles his own horses and stomps his own snakes.
You talk about all this killing so matter-of-factly. Aren't you afraid you might die?
Never was before. Truth be told, until just a few days ago, I didn't have all that much to live for.
Frank gave her a sly wink that made her knees go wobbly. He scooted her out of the way behind a pile of crates.
Now, if you'll be so kind as to stand over here, I believe young Mr. Miller is about to make his play. I can see in his eyes he's made up his mind he can kill me.
Morgan! Get out here and face me, you back-shooting son of a bitch!
Dan gave me no choice.
Ain't the way I heard it, Drifter. Now step out here and let's get to it.
All you're gonna do is get yourself killed, Jack. How'll that help your brother?
You're a little long in the tooth, Drifter. I reckon I can take an old man like you easy.
Here I am, then. Anytime you're ready, kid.
My shoulder!
It was over in an eye twitch. Frank's peacemaker belched fire and smoke, and he was left standing alone in the middle of the street. The wounded man lay writhing in the street, a red stain on his right shoulder, blood spilling onto the street and mingling with a pile of green horse manure.
Good Lord in heaven.
The tall deputy strode over from his place by the post. Frank holstered his revolver and raised his hands.
I saw it all, Mr. Morgan, sir. I saw he prodded you into it, left you no choice. I need to warn you, though. Miller has cousins.
Don't they all?
Frank lowered his hands and checked back over his shoulder at Dixie, who still had her hand over her open mouth.
My kid will get you, Drifter. I'm sorry. I couldn't take care of you for Danny's sake. But someone will.
You're a mighty bold talker for a man bleeding in a pile of horse shit. You're lucky this time. I generally don't have time to aim. If you'll quit thrashing around like this, you might make it. Let this drop, and no more of your family has to die.
You go to hell, Morgan! If I could still use my arm, I'd kill you right now!
Frank drew his gun and ejected the empty brass. He slid another round in the cylinder to take its place, then squatted down next to Miller, looking him square in the eye. In Frank's experience, if he ever had a chance to let a man look into his eyes and see what was behind them, their will to fight him had a way of evaporating.
Son, if you'd still been able to use your arm, you'd be dead right now.
Miller's face went white, maybe from loss of blood, more likely from a sudden rush of understanding. The deputy whistled two men and a wagon out of the alley by the saloon. He'd done his planning well. The two men loaded a now quiet Miller into the bed of the wagon. Once they'd clambered aboard, the wagon rattled off down the dusty street. The deputy followed.
Is that it? Is that all there is to it?
Oh, there might be some papers to sign over at the marshal's office. But other than that, I think it's over.
No hearing in front of a magistrate?
Reckon not.
Well, I'm smack in the middle of the Wild West. The dime novels about you are not far off the mark.
I thought you didn't read such nonsense.
I bought one to take to the bath with me today. It's called Frank Morgan, Notorious Gunslick and Cold-Blooded Killer.
No wonder so many folks want to brace me.
The ladies asked if they could stay in Dodge another day. Frank didn't mind. It was still early in the season, and he had nowhere else pressing he had to be. Might as well drift with a bunch of women as by himself. He saw to the loading of new supplies, while the women worked on sending telegrams back east and seeing to the personal affairs of their husbands. The water barrels hiding the group's entire life savings remained safe in plain sight. The women were aghast when Frank suggested they all buy some men's breeches for the trail.
Breeches? Why on earth would we do such a thing?
For one thing, it'll make you feel more comfortable on the trail. When we run into any trouble, you'll be able to move a lot faster. Get the older girl some, too. I'm not certain what we got in store for us, but if you end up in the saddle, I think you'll get a lot less sore in breeches.
I've never worn breeches before.
There's a lot of things you'll do you've never done before this trip's over.
Three men loitered near the entrance to the Gilded Lily Saloon and watched the women carry their packages out of the dry goods store across the street. Frank stood in the shadows and watched the men. The three looked like brothers, all from the same bad seed. Frank didn't recognize them, but he knew their type. Thieves, ne'er-do-wells, trouble hunters. In that respect, they were brothers to hundreds of men across the West. This particular trio was easy enough to spot because of their red-headed mops that stuck out under worn and dirty hats. Each sported a whole bushel basket of freckles over his face and arms. All wore their guns tied down to their thighs. Frank's suspicions were confirmed when Bat approached him at his morning coffee on their last day in Dodge.
The Benson boys have been asking a lot of questions about you and the ladies.
Three of them, Carrot Tops and Spotted a Stormy's Rump.
That's them. I've got informants that tell me they may be connected to Swan and his gang, but I got no proof. Coffee, please. Thanks. They're thieves, though. Take anything that's not nailed down. Bully, the middle one, just got out of prison a month ago.
That's his name? Bully Benson?
I don't know. That's what everyone calls him. I can't be casting stones, though, with a name like Bat.
You think they'll make a try for us?
I'd bet on it. When you get far enough out of Dodge, I've let it be known I'll have men shadowing you until you're well out of the county. I don't think anyone would make a play against you in my territory.
You do have yourself a reputation, Bat.
Yeah, look who's talking.
Frank warned Dixie while they hitched the mules to her wagon early the next morning.
We need to keep an eye out for three men who've been watching us.
Redheads?
You noticed them then.
How could we miss three scruffy men like that? They stood watching us wherever we went, scratching like they were infested with fleas.
They probably do have fleas, among other things. I am proud of you for noticing them.
Paula rode up in her wagon with the Fossman girls.
You ought to be really proud of us. We each bought 2 pairs of men's breeches for the trip.
I felt lewd in them when I tried them on.
When do you plan to change into them?
Frank climbed aboard Stormy and made ready to take the lead. He waved goodbye to Bat, who stood a few paces away in the dim morning light.
Not until we're well out of town.
Frank raised his eyebrows and winked at Bat.
I can hardly wait.
A few miles out of town, when the sun was well up, Frank reined up next to the lead wagon, Dixie's wagon. Her 2 girls were riding horseback on the opposite side on animals they'd taken from the dead kidnappers. They were fine horses, too. Something most successful outlaws insisted upon, for their very lives depended on mounts with staying power. After hearing what had happened to the women, Bat had arranged with a local magistrate in Dodge to fix up legitimate ownership papers for the animals. Frank nodded at Dixie, then surveyed the uneven plain around them.
Keep the girls close to the wagon.
Why? Indians?
Not necessarily, although there may be a band or two still out here wanting to make a name for themselves. It's those red-headed brothers I'm worried about.
You think they'll hit us this soon?
Well, they shouldn't. But who knows? They didn't look to be the brightest in the class. They might not even know where the Ford County line is. In any case, it's best to keep the girls in sight and a sharp eye on the horizon. Pass the word among the women to keep their weapons at the ready.
Dixie nodded and patted the rifle in the seat beside her. The weather remained warm and cloudless for the next 3 days, and the wagons slowly ate their way across the endless plain. 9 miles out of Ford County, they pulled up for the night at a tiny settlement made up of no more than a saloon, general store, assay office, and a jumble of surrounding shacks and brush wickiups. Paula had forgotten to get nutmeg in Dodge and set off to the store on a mission to find some, despite Frank's warning that in this little no-account town, she'd be lucky to find salt, let alone a fancy spice. Frank walked into the darkened saloon and found he had it to himself. He needed another man to talk to, someone with a low voice to rest his ears.
Beer.
Coming right up, mister. You the one leading all them women west?
I am.
How do you stand it? I could hear you coming for the last hour. All that cackling would drive me out of my head. Ain't they got no other men, folks?
Killed. All of them. By a fella named Ephraim Swan and his gang.
Heard of him. He's a bad one for a fact, he is. Cold-blooded killer.
He is at that. That was tasty. Got one more?
Yeah, best beer in town. Hell, it's the only beer in town. Hey, this one's on the house, friend. Anyone who can put up with a bunch of women on the trail deserves a little reward. Besides, you're a darn sight easier to talk to than those 3 hotheads that came in here earlier today.
3 men came here ahead of us?
Yeah, they was real scabby types. Surly, too. They wouldn't talk to me at all. Kept to themselves all together.
Redheads?
Yeah. You know them?
Afraid so.
Frank turned to go warn the women, but the Benson brothers poured through the front door before he could take a step. All 3 shuffled to the end of the bar.
3 beers.
You boys are a right smart distance out of Dodge. Did Swan have to draw you a map?
We don't know what you're talking about, mister.
The brothers had started when he mentioned the outlaw's name, as if they'd been caught red-handed stealing cattle.
Figures. I thought he'd probably pay someone to do his dirty work.
We ain't looking for no trouble, Morgan.
So you're just out for a little trip?
It might be. There ain't no law against it.
Depends on what you do while you're on that trip. Now, which one of you 3 is in charge?
I'm the oldest.
Shut up, you. You may have been well before me, but you ain't in charge of nobody.
Why can't I be in charge once in a while?
Frank put his hand on the butt of his gun.
I wish you boys would hurry up and figure it out, because I aim to kill the one in charge first.
All 3 pushed up and held out their hands.
Hey, Morgan, we said we ain't looking for trouble.
Yeah, you don't want any trouble, not here in front of the witnesses. But you'd sure as hell sneak up and cut all our throats while we're sleeping. Now I want to know which one of you took the money from Swan to come after us. Tell me the truth, and I'll only kill the one of you.
You're crazy, mister.
Frank was in his face now. He grabbed the older brother by the ear. bully took a step toward him, but Frank jerked his peacemaker from the holster and slapped him across the side of the head. A couple of bully's teeth beat him to the ground. Frank stomped down hard on Hugh's boot toe, then gave the screaming redhead a conk on the noggin as well, sending him sprawling and unconscious beside his middle brother. Frank turned to the youngest Benson, gun in hand.
All right. I just did you a big favor. You're in charge.
What do you want from me, mister?
First, I want you to put your gun on the bar where my friend here can keep it for you. Now you can do me a favor. What are your orders from Swan?
No orders.
I'm getting tired of asking you, baby Benson.
Really? We ain't got no orders. I ain't never even met the man. He just put out the word that he'd pay 10,000 cash to any man who kills you. What do you aim to do with us, Mr. Morgan?
That is a very good question. I can't just leave y'all here like this. When your fool brothers wake up, you wouldn't be in charge anymore, and they're likely to make you come after us. We can't have that now, can we?
No, sir. Reckon we can't.
Frank stared down at the unconscious men. His face suddenly brightened.
You can be in charge for a while longer. I got an idea.
You really found nutmeg in there?
Sure did. It was hiding behind a tin of baking powder. Lord, what was that?
I don't know, but I'm hoping. Are you all right?
I'm fine. I just had to shoot the two oldest Benson brothers in the foot.
What?
Shot each of them in the foot. They're bound to come after us one way or another. At least this'll slow them down.
Weren't there three?
Yeah, but the youngest one's no problem. He'll be busy tending to his wounded brothers for a while anyway. Besides, if a miracle happens and he does grow a spine, we'd smell him coming a mile away.